Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Problems with my guest. I'll just ask, Gada, are we connected? I guess not. Well, I will just carry on. I hope we can reach my guest, who is Gada Gista. Let me tell you who she is and a little about what she's doing. She can discuss it and describe it in much more detail. My knowledge is very sketchy. But Gada is the founding director of the World Proud Assembly. She's the editor of the website, which is worldproudassembly.org. She's also a freelance journalist. She's an author of The Gujarat Genocide, a case study in fundamentalist cleansing. There's a lot about India most people don't know about. The only thing you read about India is where she is right now. And what you hear about India is usually the business news, about their economy or GDP or whatever. And what you don't hear is a much different story about India that has raging poverty. India, of course, a country with over a billion people, second only to China. I guess when you have that many people, nobody really may know exactly how many they have, but it's over a billion. I haven't seen the latest numbers. I think the last time I tried to check and got some information, which was at least a couple of years ago, I believe that India has a deeply impoverished population that exceeds the entire population of the United States. That's pretty depressing.
Yes.
And are we connected?
Yes.
Gada?
We are now. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Oh, indeed, I was introducing you. Oh, well, I was already with some other things to discuss in case I couldn't reach you. I always worry when I try to reach somebody in a place that I haven't done and in case somebody is out of the way. But we are connected.
Yes.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you right now, yes.
Well, we want to talk about your work, what you're doing. So let me let you explain it, exactly what you're doing and how important it is.
Well, I'll be glad to do that, but I need to always start with you, Steve, by saying God bless you for the wonderful work you do on behalf of everyone who is suffering, you know, because I need for people to hear that, you know, what a wonderful person you are, you know, through your writings and your radio show, your brilliant voice on behalf of the oppressed, you know.
God, I just think of myself as a soldier in the trenches, and I, all the time on my mind is to get more and more people involved, because things don't get better either in the U.S. or in most other places. They don't get better. They just keep getting worse. And the people running the governments in these countries, they don't care about the people most in need. They just care about the rich people and the big corporations.
Yes.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
This is a dysfunctional society. It's a dysfunctional system. And unless we change it, heaven help everybody.
Yes, and you've just given the reason why there is so much hunger everywhere, you know. I mean, there's hunger where I am. There's hunger everywhere, you know. So since May, just to answer your earlier question, since May 2010, I'm running an NGO called Hearts Healing Hunger, and it's in North Bengal, India. The website is heartshealinghunger.com. And at present, we are feeding about 2,000 people each month. We're on a shoestring budget, and we'll be grateful for any amount that people in America listening today could send. $100 will feed up to 1,000 people one good meal here. So $100 will go a long way. Yesterday evening in a nearby village, the people were fighting to get the food, and it's just 1 mile from our home. In this area of North Bengal, 60% are living below the poverty level. People are so hungry that about 150 people finish up pots of rice in 10 minutes.
Got it.
And
you know,
the women are asking us to bring clothes and blankets. It's very cold now. You know, so it's hard work, you know.
Got it. The number you gave was astonishing. Literally, if my math is right, literally 10 cents will buy a meal that a starving Indian poor person will probably relish, because if that person
yes.
doesn't get that meal, they may end up
yes.
getting nothing.
Yes.
When you gave your website, Gata, you were choppy and I didn't understand it. Give it again.
Okay.
And in case it needs spelling, maybe you can spell it for listeners.
Yes. It's Hearts Healing Hunger. H-E-A-R-T-S, H-E-A-L-I-N-G, H-U-N-G-E-R .org.
I got it. Hearts, plural. Healing.
Hearts healing.
Hearts healing. Hunger. .org.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's easy to remember. We'll give it again
right.
at the end of the program, but it's Hearts, plural,
yes.
Healing, Hunger. Hearts Healing Hunger.
Right.
In other words, good people with good hearts, healing people who are hungry. And and what better time of year to talk about something like that? It's incredible, Gata. Most people have little idea how much hunger there is in America. So you can just imagine
yes.
India with a population more than three times what this country is, and a population
yes.
of poor people. Is it an accurate statement
yes.
to say that India has an impoverished population greater than the entire population of America?
Yes, I think that would be correct. I mean, there was a recent, about two or three months ago, there was an article written by, I think his name was Jansen, saying that 1 million people in India die of starvation every year. And this fact never comes in the mainstream here. And problem in India of mass starvation, but also, Steve, in Chicago and other places in America, thanks to the speculators and bankers, we have homeless men and women in their 30s and 40s who are found now frozen to death in a field or inside a snowbank next to a mini mart.
Oh.
And these people have just been abandoned by us, abandoned by the government and also by us. You know, so there's just, you know, we're seeing severe food inflation. The UN earlier this year warned about another global food price crisis. And, you know, Steve, a few people have said, oh, Gata, your work won't make a bit of difference. Millions are starving. What difference will it make? They say we need to establish these self-sufficient communities. And the thing is, Steve, no one is more aware of this than I am. But I want to ask those people in America who ask me this question, I want to ask them that from this moment until those self-sufficient communities are established, what are all the hungry people supposed to eat? You know?
Well, the hungry people won't exist
beings.
Anymore, Gata, if they don't get help, because they'll starve to death. And the problem,
I mean,
is not enough food. There is plenty of food in the world. The problem is
yeah.
that the rising cost at a time of it's a strange deflation, but let's call it at a time of deflation that we hear
yeah.
talked about all the time in the U.S. At this time, food prices continue to rise And it simply becomes unaffordable for very poor people, like the poor of India,
yes,
the poor of Haiti,
yes,
the poor all around the world that simply can't afford these high,
yes,
prices. What on earth are they going to do? And the other,
yes,
problem is distribution. You know, it's distributed where people who can get all the food they want easily, that's where it's distributed. So you go down to your local supermarket, you know, in America, and I guess,
right,
in the big Indian metropolitan areas, I'm sure,
yeah,
they have their supermarkets or whatever they're called, and you can buy whatever,
right,
you want. The people who can afford it can buy whatever they want, and if they wish, they probably can have somebody deliver it to them at home.
Right. Yes. Uh huh. But see, right now, 1 kilo of rice, which is the staple food, is now 100 rupees a kilo. That's like an American paying $100 for a kilo of rice. It's unthinkable. And yet these are the prices people are facing here in India, you see? And the same thing with lentils, you know, which is also a staple. That's also more than 100 rupees a kilo, and it's way out of reach for the poor people.
Oh, you indeed, know? It is.
And
I think your political system, Garda, is not too dissimilar from the one we have here. You have two major parties, the BHP.
Yes, the BJP.
Oh, I'm sorry,
the DJP.
I'm sorry, I got my initials wrong. The DJP and the Congress Party, which is like,
right,
our Republicans,
right,
and Democrats. And there really isn't much difference, as I understand it, between. They want people to think there's a difference between them, just like here,
yes,
the parties want people to think there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats, but there is no difference. And I think it's the same in India.
Not.
They're pro-business,
yes,
they're anti-poor people.
Yes, yes. Well, the question is that how long, you know, we have to think, how long is the world community going to tolerate all this hunger? How long are the hungry people going to tolerate it, Steve? You know, we have a handful of wealthy elite controlling our planet and deciding really who will live and who will die. And to remove these people from power, what I feel is we need a world revolution. And I believe it will happen because the suffering humanity can tolerate only so much. You know, we have 192 countries on the planet, and in 95% of those countries, we see unbounded political oppression and severe economic exploitation.
Oh,
and as
so
the great Frederick Douglass told us, people will be oppressed exactly as long as they tolerate that oppression. And another, Paulo Freire, spent his life teaching in the slums of Brazil, and what he taught those people was they are oppressed, and this is the name of their oppressor. And that, you know, he describes it in his classic called Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And this kind of meaningful political education, Steve, is spreading. And you're a part of that meaningful education, Steve. And once enough people are politically educated, they will not tolerate this present economic.
I agree.
They will
I
not
agree,
tolerate
Gata.
Their hunger.
I agree, Gata.
Mm-hmm.
No one will ever mistake me for a member of the super rich. But at the same time,
yeah,
I don't worry about where my next meal is coming from, and at least so far, I don't worry about being out on the street, which is not a good idea in Chicago in the winter. And
yes,
I must say I take heart from what might have been the only worthy or common sense or decent statement that came out of the Nixon administration back in the 1970s. And it came from,
yes,
the head of his Council of Economic Advisors, Herb Stein. You know the quote. It's given different ways, but he said, "Things that can't go on forever won't. This cannot,
yes,
go on forever.
Yes.
And it won't go on forever. Someday it'll end.
Right.
I certainly hope, and you do too, it will end peacefully. But the,
yes,
deep oppression,
yes,
the deep indifference of the rich getting,
yes,
getting so much richer all the time, and the poor suffering,
right,
so much more all the time,
right,
this
right,
chasm between the super elite at the top and growing numbers of masses below them. I mean, this is intolerable, and nobody cares.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter in America, Gatta, whether you have a Democrat Obama or you have a Republican Bush. As far as I'm concerned, it's the same person wearing a mask, wearing a different mask.
Yes, you're right. Yes, yes. I mean, when we have 1 million people dying of starvation every year in India, really it means the time for gradual change is over. And if we have 30 and 40-year-old American men and women dying alone, you know, in a snowbank somewhere in Chicago, again, it means the time for gradual change is over. So we should expect radical and drastic change around the world. We should expect a world revolution. It's not because we want it. It's not because of anything you or I do. It's simply because those who suffer are going to reach their limit, and they're bound to move towards militancy. As a last desperate step to stop all this oppression, that causes them to weep deep into the night, you know? And also, Steve, that the powers that be are carefully monitoring the mood of the people in America, in Europe, so that they can crush any revolt. But frankly, they won't be able to stop it because the oppression is too great. These wealthy people have become too greedy, you know, and now governments are slashing essential social services that make the difference between life and death for thousands, and these cuts are crimes against humanity. They're going to cause hundreds of thousands of elderly people, single women, and children to die of hunger and cold, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. It's an obscenity. How India governs, how the U.S. governs, how so many other countries govern. And, of course, I focus so much on what's going on here. And this morning I put out an article on the START Treaty, the so-called New START Treaty with Russia. And, of course, the media here is praising it, explaining nothing about what this thing is really all about. As far as I'm concerned, the evidence that I see and wrote about, it literally has nothing to do with arms control. We're talking about nuclear weapons now. It has nothing to do with disarmament. It has nothing to do with making the world safer. What it has to do with, and the reason that conservative Democrats and Republicans voted for it, the vote was very strong. It's a treaty, so it needed a two-thirds vote here. It needed at least 67 senators. All treaties are only handled in the Senate. And technically, the Senate only gets the right to advise a consent. But they always have a vote up or down. So if the Senate votes it down, it'll go down. Well, the Senate voted in favor. They needed 67. I believe was 71 to 26. Well, that included a lot of Republicans. Well, why did the conservatives support it? It wasn't because they gave a damn about any kind of an arms treaty. They voted for it because there were huge add-ons to this bill on the U.S. side to reward the war profiteers. The war profiteers will make many billions of dollars every year because of this treaty.
Right.
And Obama even lied about it. If you go to the White House, website and read their press releases, you'll see something by Obama saying, over the next decade, we'll spend $80 billion on nuclear-related weapons. Well, I mean, that alone is an obscenity. I mean, why should we spend 10 cents on them? But he lied, because the true number, it was either 80 or 85, he said. The true number is 180 as a committed, $180 billion over the next decade, and there's no question that there will be billions of dollars of add-ons before they get done between now and 2020. It could be $360 billion.
Right.
And this is the way we spend our money, Gatta. And at the same time, we have planned austerity coming. They want to cut Social Security. They're cutting Medicare.
Right.
They're cutting Medicaid.
Right.
They want to give less than other desperate benefits to needy people who literally are dependent on this because they can't find a job, or if they find one, they can't earn enough to support their families.
Right.
And as bad as
right.
it is here, Ghana, it's a lot worse in India.
Yes, I know. Well, Noah, in America, it's probably approaching, I don't know, you can tell me better, but I feel it's probably approaching 1929. In an earlier article, you wrote that unemployment in Detroit is past 40%.
Oh, I think
I'm pretty
I think
sure
it's
you wrote that.
Yeah, I think it's over 50% now, and the true unemployment
yes.
in America it literally is heading toward the second leg of this terrible crisis we're going through has yet to strike, but it's coming because the
yes.
rot in the system is so extreme that you know
yes.
you can levitate the economy with the Fed created credit and by
right.
cutting benefits to the poor. You can only play that game so long, but the power
right.
elite in this country and in Western countries, Gata, they know that they
mm-hmm.
can only keep this thing going so long. They're papering over the rot, and it's
right.
like it's like the boy with his finger in the dike. Well, that's only going to work
yes.
so long, and at some point
yes.
the whole dike is going to give way, and they know it.
Right.
So they're taking their wealth
uh-huh.
and they're stashing it in tax havens,
yeah.
Literally trillions
yeah.
of dollars sucked out of the economy that they
yeah.
could have made us healthy long ago. Well, it could have avoided the crisis if we were governed responsibly, but we weren't.
Yeah.
But there is a terrible, I think this is far worse than 1929. And as far as income
yeah.
goes, I think the disparity between the top 1% and I don't know where they draw the line.
The rest of us.
Well,
yes.
really, the rest of
yes.
us. I think the disparity is greater than it's ever been before. I mean, this is an obscenity. People
yes.
should not allow
yes.
a system like this to go on. And we call ourselves a democracy. We call ourselves
yes.
an equitable society. We're exactly the opposite
yes.
of those things.
But
it either passed or it will. Oh, I think it did pass. The largest U.S. military budget in history. The official number, I think, was about $725 billion. But the real number is close
yes.
to $1.5 trillion. Because
yeah,
there are black
yeah.
budgets, there are add-ons all through the year, $1.5 trillion to fight illegal wars, and we don't have
yeah.
we don't have much of anything to help people in great need. What kind of a country does stuff
right.
like this?
Right.
At least
right.
India isn't waging wars with anybody right now.
Yes. Well, first of all, because of this horrible gap that you just said is probably the worst in human history, you know, we should first assume that there will be a world revolution. And then the question arises, what next? What will happen in that post-revolutionary phase? What will be the new level of morality and compassion? And how do we prevent a repeat of the present and move to a far more civilized society? To a glorious society. And what I feel is it means we cannot only talk about a physical or military revolution. We have to talk about revolution in holistic terms. So, you know, for example, the common people, I feel, are longing for a higher morality and even a greater spirituality as an integral part of their daily lives. And we need to imbibe the highest standards of personal morality. And this stems by imbibing the highest levels of compassion, you know, for human beings, for animals and plants. And we need to have a clear vision of what a morally and spiritually elevated society will look like. We need to have a clear vision of what the new economic paradigm will look like, which is essentially to decentralize economies everywhere. And again, it's not that we wish for a revolution. It's not that we want a world revolution. But what to do? We have, as you know, Steve, you've written about it so many times. We have a growing global police state. We have a growing global surveillance of the masses. And the exploitative powers themselves are rendering revolution unavoidable. This is what I see happening. Nobody wishes. But when the wealthy insist on controlling every facet of the world, when they're just going out of control, I think there will be that limit. There will be an explosion. You know, it's themselves who are going to bring on this revolution.
Well, Gotti, you're absolutely right. History proves you right. It's not an idle statement to say what you did. History proves you right. When people suffer to the point where they simply can't take it anymore, they finally react, and it usually is a violent reaction. Nobody wants a violent reaction. If we only had people in government that understood this and said, you know, it's a lot better to do responsible things now than wait for the worst to happen, and then even if we can put it down, we have a terrible mess on our hands. Do we literally want millions of people all over the country against us? And I mean, they will despise us. They will do anything they can to resist us. Do we really want a situation like that? I mean, we'll have to have armed guards protect us in our homes, because these people won't stop at anything. I mean, they'll knock your door down and pull you in the street and maybe kill you. That's how angry they'll be. Again, they'll only take it for so long. We need to avoid that. Right. We need to avoid it with responsible policies. But they're not coming. Next week, Ada, I have a two-part. I did this a year ago on Obama, a year one assessment in two parts. I have another one coming next week. I held off until the lame duck Congress got done, because I had to keep making updates as they did more damage. I think the damage is over with now, so my article is pretty much done. I'll get it out. It's a two year horror story, Gata. It's a two-year horror story, and if anybody reads last year's and reads this year's and think Obama is better than George Bush, well, their mind is very clogged, because it's very clogged. Obama is, in fact, worse than George Bush, and I proved it in black and white with facts, not rhetoric, not rant, with facts. I proved that he's even worse than George Bush.
Yes.
We're getting near the end of the hour. I want to give you a website again. I think listeners can hear me more clearly than they're hearing you.
Yes.
But the website people can go to help, my God, 10 cents to feed a starving Indian person. My goodness.
Yes.
The website is hearthealinghunger.org.
Yes.
I hope listeners will go there, and in this holiday season, where people have good thoughts on their minds, maybe they'll share a few of those good thoughts, feeding a few hungry people in India.
I hope so. And if anybody feels like helping here, you know, my phone number here is 98510-90212. That's 98510-90212. Anybody can help, you know. I think if you could see the hunger here, it would cause, for the listeners, it would cause a revolution in your life.
Got one more thing I want to mention. You could be very comfortable back here in the U.S., where you've spent so much time, you've lived here. But instead, you're in India, doing the work that you're doing. Talk about blessed work, Gata. You truly are a heroic person. You're doing this out of the goodness of your heart. No one's paying you a big salary to be trying to help people in great need. But you're there instead of here. That is my definition of heroic.
Oh no, Steve. There are many good people here who are feeding people, who are doing so much service, you know. But really, you know, my dream was to feed 1,000 a day. We are feeding 2,000 a month, and my dream when I came here was to feed 1,000 every day.
Oh,
because
my goodness.
The need is there.
Gotta wait.
You know,
I'm afraid we're at the bottom of the hour, the top of the hour for you. And is it 10 p.m. for you now?
It is 10 p.m. Yes.
10 p.m. It's 11:30 in New York. My great thanks, Gata, for coming on.
Bless you, Steve, for giving me the chance to talk about this project.
Gata, I welcome you anytime to come on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I'll tell my listeners, tune in this weekend. We recorded in advance, but fresh programming over the holiday weekend on Christmas and the Sunday after at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, make this a regular habit.